Welcome to this special radio presentation of The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein. The adaptation of this year's One Book, One Denver selection was produced by students and faculty of the University of Colorado Denver College of Arts and Media.
Gestures are all that I have. Sometimes they must be grand in nature. It is what I must do in order to communicate clearly and effectively. And that's why I'm here now, waiting for Denny to come home. He should be here soon, lying on the cool tiles of the kitchen floor in a puddle of my own urine. I'm old, and while I'm very capable of getting older, that's not the way I want to go out. That's humiliating and degrading. But I know what's next. I've seen it on TV. A documentary I saw about Mongolia, of all places. It was the best thing I've ever seen on television, other than the 1993 Grand Prix of Europe, the greatest automobile race of all time. After this race, the documentary about Mongolia is the best thing I've seen, about being a dog and what happens in his next lifetime. I am ready. I hear the door open and I hear Denny with his familiar cry.
Yo, Enzo!
I hear his footsteps, the concern in his voice. He finds me and looks down.
Oh, Enz. What happened, kid?
Gestures can't explain.
Take it easy, kid. I've got you.
He lifts me easily. He cradles me and I can smell the day on him. I can smell everything he's done. His work, the auto shop where he's behind the counter all day, standing, making nice with customers who yell at him because their BMWs don't work right and it costs too much to fix them, and I can smell his lunch. He went to the Indian buffet he likes. I can smell beer. He stopped somewhere. Now it makes sense, the elapsed time.
Sorry I was late. I should have come straight home, but the guys from work insisted.
He places me gently in the tub and cleans me from my mess. And after the bath, he cleans the kitchen floor while I watch.
I am so sorry, Enzo.
But I don't want him to feel bad about this. I want him to see the obvious, that it's okay to let me go. After this happens, Denny will be free to live his life. And I will return and shake his hand and comment on how talented he is. And then I will wink at him and say, Enzo says hello, and turn and walk away as he calls after me. Do I know you? He will call. Have we met before?
Okay, kiddo. Let's go outside. Let me help you.
He lifts my butt into the air and centers my weight over my legs, and then I'm okay. To show him, I rub my muzzle against his thigh.
There's my Enzo.
When we get back, he gives me my bedtime cookies, and I curl into my bed on the floor next to his. He picks up the phone and dials.
Mike, can you cover for me tomorrow? I have to take Enzo to the vet again.
We've been going to the vet a lot. Denny stops talking for a minute, and when he starts again, his voice doesn't sound like his voice.
I don't know, he says. I'm not sure it's a round-trip visit.
I may not be able to form the words, but I understand them. It's the right thing for Denny to do. He's done so much for me, my whole life. We had a good run, and now it's over. He picked me out of a pile of puppies.
This one!
A man said, and it was the first glimpse of the rest of my life. He had keen, ice-blue eyes. His choppy hair and short, scruffy beard were dark and wiry, like an Irish terrier.
The pick of the litter. The sweetest, the best.
We were thinking of keeping him.
That was the line he always used. He used it to get more money.
Will you let him go?
For a price.
Then he moved me far from the farm in Spengel to a Seattle neighborhood where he lived in a little apartment he rented on Lake Washington. I grew quickly, and during that first year, Denny and I forged a deep fondness for each other, as well as a feeling of trust. We would watch race videos together. He would explain these things to me. To me.
Very gently. Like there are eggshells on your pedals. You don't want to break them. That's how you drive in the rain.
Balance, anticipation, patience. These are all vital, he would tell me. But what I've always liked best is when he talks about having no memory. To remember is to disengage from the present. Then he says racing is doing. It is being part of the moment and being aware of nothing else but that moment.
It's just you and me, Enzo.
And it was just us for a while, which is why I was surprised when he fell in love with her so quickly. I tried not to act off-putting because I knew how infatuated Denny was with her. We were both satellites orbiting Denny's sun. Of course, she had the advantage of thumbs.
You don't mind if I love him too, do you? I won't come between you.
I respected her for asking, but I knew she would come between us. Her name was Eve. Soon after she moved into our apartment, they were married in a small wedding ceremony, which I attended, along with a group of their closest friends and Eve's immediate family. Upon our return from the wedding, I noticed that Eve moved through our apartment with a greater sense of authority. And yet, while I was unhappy with her intrusion, there was something about her that prevented me from mustering any real anger. I believe that thing was her swollen belly. She devoted herself to the baby before it was even born. She once asked if I wanted to know what it felt like, and I did. So she held my face against her belly, and I felt it move. I remember the day the baby arrived. I had just reached adulthood, 2 years by calendar count. Denny was in Daytona, Florida for the drive of his career. Eve was dismayed by the unfortunate timing of events. On the day of the race, even though it was more than a week before schedule, Eve felt the contractions and called the midwives, who invaded our home and quickly took charge.
Could I have a minute alone?
Of course. Come with us, puppy.
No, he can stay.
I could stay? Despite myself, I felt proud.
I know I told him to go, but I so wish he was here.
I had no idea what to do, but I knew not to move. She needed me there.
Will you promise to always protect her?
She wasn't asking me. She was asking Denny, and I was merely Denny's surrogate. Still, I felt the obligation. The next day, Denny came home from Daytona, unhappy. His mood immediately changed when he held his little girl.
Do you see my little angel, Enns?
Did I see her? I practically birthed her.
I should have been here.
She came early. You can't know what's going to happen.
Yes, I can. If I'm any good, I can.
To Zoe.
To Zoe.
To Zoe, I said to myself, whom I will always protect. With Denny and Eve working, and Zoe off at daycare, I was left to my own devices. Until one day when a fortunate accident happened that changed my life. Denny turned on the TV in the morning to check the weather report, and he forgot to turn the TV off. Let me tell you this. The Weather Channel is not about weather, it is about the world. Denny returned from work that evening. I was still glued to the television.
What are you watching? The Weather Channel?
He scoffed, snatching up the remote and changing the channel.
Here.
He changed it to the Speed Channel. I had watched plenty of TV as I grew up, but only when a person was already watching. Denny and I enjoyed racing in the movie channels. Even I watched music videos, and Zoe and I watched Sesame Street. But suddenly the idea of watching television by myself entered my life.
I didn't know you were a television dog. I can leave it on for you during the day, if you want.
I want.
But you have to limit yourself. I don't want to catch you watching TV all day long. I'm counting on you to be responsible.
I am responsible. I was so immersed in my education, I suppose I lost count of the weeks. So I was surprised by the arrival of Zoe's second birthday. Suddenly, I was engulfed by a party in the apartment with a bunch of little kids. Denny had a surprise birthday present for Zoe. He showed her a photograph that she looked at briefly and with little interest. But then he showed the same photograph to Eve, and it made Eve cry.
Look at this, Enzo. This is your new yard. Aren't you excited?
I guess I was excited. Actually, I was kind of confused. I didn't understand the implications. And then everyone started shoving things in boxes and scrambling around, and the next thing I knew, my bed was somewhere else entirely. The house was nice. Eve and Denny were in love with the place. When Denny came home from work, he would take me outside and throw the ball, which I happily retrieved. And then Zoe got big enough that she would run around and squeal while I pretended to chase her.
Don't run like that. Enzo will bite you.
Enzo would never hurt Zoe. Ever.
And he was right. I knew I was different from other dogs. I had a certain willpower that was strong enough to overcome my more primal instincts. Still, Eve didn't know that, and I had no way of explaining it to her, so I never played rough with Zoe. I didn't want Eve to start worrying unnecessarily, because I had already smelled it. When Denny was away, and Eve fed me, and she leaned down to give me my bowl of food, and my nose was near her head, I had detected a bad odor, like rotting wood, mushrooms, decay. Wet, soggy decay. It came from her ears and her sinuses. There was something inside Eve's head that didn't belong. Given a facile tongue, I could have warned them. I could have alerted them to her condition long before they discovered it with their machines and their computers. My nose, yes, my little black nose, could smell the disease in Eve's brain long before even she knew it was there. One summer Saturday afternoon, Denny and I studied one of his tapes of racing endurance in the rain.
Drivers are afraid of the rain. Rain amplifies your mistakes, and water on the track makes your car handle unpredictably. When something unpredictable happens, you have to react to it. If you're reacting at speed, you're reacting too late, and so you should be afraid.
I'm afraid just watching it. I love you. I love all of you, even your racing. I just don't think I could ever do it myself.
She went off into the kitchen. I left Denny at the TV and walked into the kitchen. Eve was preparing dinner.
Bored with the race?
I wasn't bored. I could have watched the race all that day and the next. I was manifesting something. I lay down near the refrigerator, in a favorite spot of mine, and rested. I could tell she felt self-conscious with me there. That I had chosen to be with her seemed to confuse her. She didn't understand my intentions. But then she got rolling with dinner and she forgot about me. First she started some hamburger frying, which smelled good. She added onions and garlic to a pot, and then a can of tomatoes. And the kitchen was rich with the smell of food. The smell of it and the heat of the day made me feel quite drowsy, so I must have nodded off until I felt her hands on me.
Sweet dog,
she said to me.
Sweet dog.
I had always wanted to love Eve as Denny loved her, but I never had because I was afraid. She was my rain. She was my unpredictable element. She was my fear. A couple of years after we moved into the new house, something very frightening happened. Denny got a seat for a race at Watkins Glen and a well-established team, and he didn't have to find all the sponsorship money for his seat.
It's so exciting! Daddy's a professional race car driver.
And Zoe would hop into her little race car and drive around in circles proclaiming,
I am the champion! I am the champion!
I got so caught up in the excitement, I was doing idiotic dog things like digging up the lawn. It was the best times, really. And then it was the worst of times. Race day came and Eve woke up with a darkness upon her. A pain so insufferable, she stood in the kitchen in the early hours, before Zoe was awake and vomited with great intensity into the sink.
I don't know what's wrong with me, Enzo.
I knew what was wrong, but I had no way to tell her, so I pushed at her thigh with my muzzle.
I feel like someone's crushing my skull.
And quickly she gathered some things while I watched. She shoved Zoe's clothes in a bag, and some of her own, and toothbrushes. All so fast. And she roused Zoe, and bang, the door slammed shut, and click, click, the deadbolt was thrown, and they were gone. When I was locked in the house suddenly and firmly, I did not panic. I did not overcorrect or freeze. I am a dog, and I know how to fast. For 3 days, I took care to ration the toilet water. I wandered around the house sniffing at the crack beneath the pantry door and fantasizing about a big bowl of my kibble, scooping up the occasional errant dust-covered Cheerio Zoe had dropped in a corner somewhere, and I urinated and defecated on the mat by the back door next to the laundry machines. I did not panic. During the second night, I began to hallucinate, looking at the legs of Zoe's high chair where I had discovered some remnants of yogurt spilled long ago. I inadvertently sparked my stomach's digestive juices to life with an unpleasant groan, and I heard a sound coming from her bedroom. One of her stuffed animals was moving about on its own. It was the zebra. I never cared for that zebra, as it was something of my rival for Zoe's affection. The now-living zebra said nothing to me at all, but when it saw me, it began a dance, a twisting, jerky ballet, and I stalked the bastard as it abused and humiliated each of Zoe's toys. Finally, I could take no more, and I moved in, teeth bared for the attack, to end the brutal burlesque once and for all. Traumatized, I left Zoe's room, hoping that what I had seen was in my mind, a vision driven by the lack of glucose in my blood, but knowing, somehow, that it wasn't a vision. It was true. Something terrible had happened. The following afternoon, Denny returned. I heard the taxi pull up, and I watched him unload his bags and walk them up to the back door. He took out his keys and opened the door, and I tried to block him, but he came in too quickly, and the mat made a squishy sound.
What the hell? What are you doing here?
He glanced around the kitchen. Nothing was out of place, except me.
Eve?
But Eve wasn't there. I didn't know where she was, but she wasn't with me.
Are they home?
He asked me. I didn't answer. He picked up the phone and dialed.
Are Eve and Zoe still at your house? Can I speak to Eve?
After a moment, he said,
Enzo is here. I'm trying to wrap my head around it myself. You left him here? This is insane. How could you not remember that your dog is in the house?
He listened for a moment and then said,
He's been here the whole time?
And then he hung up the phone and shouted in frustration, a big long shout that was very loud. He looked at me and said,
I am so pissed off.
He walked through the house quickly. I didn't follow him. I waited by the back. A minute later, he returned.
This is the only place you used? Good boy, Enzo. Good work.
He got a garbage bag out of the pantry and scooped the sopping mat into it, tied it closed, and put it on the back porch.
You must be starving.
He filled my water bowl and gave me some kibble, which I ate too quickly and didn't enjoy, but at least it filled the empty space in my stomach. In silence, fuming, he watched me eat. And very soon, Eve and Zoe arrived on the back porch. Denny threw open the door.
Unbelievable. You are unbelievable.
I was sick. I wasn't thinking.
He could have died.
He didn't die.
He could have died. I've never heard of anything so stupid, careless, totally unaware.
I was sick.
Eve snapped at him. Zoe was hiding behind her.
I wasn't thinking.
You don't think. People die. Dogs die. Die!
I can't do this anymore. You always go away, and I have to take care of Zoe and Enzo all by myself. It's too much. I can barely take care of myself.
Well, you should have called Mike or taken him to a kennel or something. Don't try to kill him.
I didn't try to kill him.
I heard weeping and looked over. Zoe stood in the corner to the hallway, crying. E pushed past Denny and went to Zoe, kneeling before her.
Oh, baby, we're sorry we're fighting. We'll stop. Please don't cry.
My animals!
What happened to your animals?
Eve led Zoe by the hand down the hall. Denny followed them. I stayed where I was. I wasn't going near that room where the dancing sex freak zebra had been. I didn't want to see it. Suddenly, I heard thundering footsteps. I cowered by the back door as Denny hurtled through the kitchen toward me.
You stupid dog!
He growled and grabbed the back of my neck, taking a huge fistful of my fur and jerking me through the kitchen and down the hall and into Zoe's room where she sat. Stunned, in the middle of the room. Her dolls, her animals, all torn to shreds, a complete disaster. Total carnage. I could only assume that the evil demon zebra had destroyed all the other animals after I had left. I should have eliminated the zebra when I had the chance. Denny was so angry that his anger filled up the entire room, the entire house. Nothing was as large as Denny's anger. He reared up and roared, and with his great hand, he struck me on the side of the head. I toppled over with a yelp, hunkering close to the ground as possible.
Bad dog!
He bellowed and raised his hand to hit me again.
Denny, no!
Eve cried, and she rushed and covered me with her own body. She protected me. Denny stopped. He wouldn't hit her, no matter what.
We'll get you new animals, baby. We'll go to the store tomorrow.
Later, after everyone had eaten, and Zoe was put to bed in her room that had been cleaned of the carnage, I found Denny sitting on the porch steps. I approached cautiously, and he noticed.
It's okay, boy.
He patted the step next to him, and I went to him. I sniffed his wrist and took a tentative lick. He smiled and rubbed my neck.
I'm really sorry. I lost my mind. I know she had a virus, but still, I can't believe she left you like that.
Did he really believe that, or was he lying to himself? Had I been a person, I could have told him the truth about Eve's condition.
I love you, boy. And I promise I'll never do that again, no matter what. I'm really sorry.
He was blathering. He was a bit drunk, but it made me feel so much love for him, too.
You're tough. You can do 3 days like that because you are one tough dog.
I felt proud.
I know you'd never do anything deliberately to hurt Zoe.
I laid my head on his leg and looked up at him.
Sometimes I think you actually understand me. It's like there's a person inside there. Like you know everything.
I do, I said to myself. I do. The clues were all there. I simply hadn't read them correctly. Over the winter, Denny had played a racing game, obsessively, which wasn't like him. He was studying the circuits. I'd heard him talk about how accurate the backgrounds are on these video games. He started running several days a week and swimming at the pool. Denny was lean and strong and ready to do battle in a race car. Even Zoe seemed to know all about his leaving. He had told them. He hadn't told me.
Be good now. Watch over the girls.
Please come back.
I promise. I'll come back in one piece.
I don't care how many pieces. Just promise you'll come back.
He quickly glanced at me, as if I could clarify what she was really asking. I, however, knew exactly what she meant. She knew something was wrong with her, though she didn't know what.
I promise.
After he had gone, Eve closed her eyes and took a deep breath. When she opened her eyes again, she looked at me and I could see that she had resolved something for herself as well.
I insisted he do it,
she said to me.
I think it will be good for me. It will make me stronger.
That was the first of the series, and the race didn't go well for Denny, though went fine for Eve, Zoe, and me. We watched it on TV. The second race came only a few weeks after the first, and again, Eve and Zoe and I managed fine. For Denny, the results of the race were very much the same as the first, 30th place. Denny was extremely frustrated.
I like the guys,
he told us at dinner when he was home for a stretch.
They're good people, but they're not a good pit crew.
Can't you get a new crew?
I was in the kitchen next to the dining room. I never stayed in the dining room when they ate, out of respect. So I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. Zoe was pushing her chicken nuggets around on her plate.
Eat them, honey. Don't play with them.
It's not the quality of the man. It's the quality of the team.
How can you fix it? What's the point of racing if you can't finish? Zoe, you've only had 2 bites. Eat.
They want me to work with Apex Porsche people next week. Work hard with the pit crew so there are no more mistakes. The sponsors are getting frustrated.
Eve fell silent.
Next week is your week off.
I won't be gone long. 3 or 4 days. Good salad. Did you make the dressing yourself?
I couldn't read their body language because I couldn't see them. But there are some things a dog can sense. Tension, fear, anxiety.
You're not leaving the table until you eat your nuggets.
I don't like nuggets!
All these emotions have a distinctive smell, many of which were exuding from the dining room at that moment.
I'll make you a hot dog.
No, she'll eat the nuggets. She likes nuggets. She's just being difficult. Eat.
She doesn't like the nuggets. I'll make her a hot dog.
Zoe started to cry. I went to the door and looked in. Eve was standing at the head of the table, her face red and pinched. Zoe was sobbing into her nuggets. Denny stood to make himself bigger. It's important for the alpha to be bigger.
I'll make her a hot dog.
She's just doing this because you're here. I'm not making a new dinner every time she decides she doesn't like something.
You're overreacting. Why don't you go lie down and let me finish up here?
Fine!
Eve whirled from the table and into the kitchen, nearly knocking me over. She proceeded on into the backyard. After a moment, Denny said,
If you're still hungry, I can make you a hot dog.
Zoe shook her head.
Thanks, Zoe. I'll take care of Mommy now. You can go play or watch TV.
I wandered into the dining room and scanned the floor for droppings. There wasn't much, but I was still hungry. But in the kitchen, I found a nugget. I sniffed the nugget and recoiled in disgust. It was bad. Rancid. I felt bad for Zoe. All she had to do was say that nuggets didn't taste right, and all this could have been avoided. But then again, I suppose they needed this moment. When Denny went away the following week, we went to Eve's parents' house so they could take care of us. Maxwell and Trish lived in a very fancy house on Mercer Island, with an amazing view of Lake Washington and Seattle. When we arrived, they started in about Denny right away. He doesn't spend enough time with Zoe. He's neglecting your relationship. His dog needs a bath. Like my hygiene had anything to do with it.
What are you going to do?
What do I need to do about Denny? This season is really important for his career.
I'm sorry. I just want what's best for you.
I know, Daddy. I want what's best for me, too.
She took her wine outside in the backyard, and I lingered. Maxwell opened the refrigerator and retrieved a jar of hot peppers he liked to eat.
Ugh, do you see how frail she's gotten?
My daughter. With a mechanic. No, not a mechanic. A customer service technician. Where did we go wrong?
After a moment, Trish said,
Quiet! quiet. The dog is watching you.
Maybe he wants a pepper. Want a treat, boy?
That wasn't why I had been watching him. I was watching him to better glean the meaning of his words. Still, I was hungry, so I sniffed the pepper.
They're good. Imported from Italy.
I took the pepper and immediately felt a prickly sensation on my tongue. My stomach churned. I immediately left the room and the house. I lapped at my bowl of water, but it did little to help. When they took me out that night to do my business, did I then learn my lesson. Never accept food from someone I didn't fully trust. Denny got his first victory in Laguna, and followed it with another in Atlanta, and then Denver. That summer, when we gathered around the dinner table, there was something to talk about. Suddenly people were hanging around, coming over for dinner. Eve was happy again, too. Her health had greatly improved with no explanation. No more headaches, no more nausea. We sat on the back porch, basking in the early evening sun, Zoe running in the sprinkler. I was on the deck, soaking up all the heat.
Maybe it wasn't meant to be.
So come with me next week. Zoe will love it. We'll stay where they have a pool. She loves anything with a pool. And you can come to the track for the race.
I can't go to the track. Not now. I mean, I wish I could. I really do. But I've been feeling good lately, you know? And I'm afraid it might give me a... I might react badly to it. Do you understand?
I do.
I did too. Everything about the track, the sounds, the smells, Denny and I fed off of it. It gave us life.
We could use a turkey baster.
Eve began to laugh harder than I had seen her laugh in a long time.
I could leave you with a cup full of potential babies in the refrigerator.
And she laughed even harder. I didn't get the joke, but Eve thought it was hysterical. She got up and went into the house, reappearing a moment later with the turkey baster from the kitchen. They giggled together, and I looked with them, and we all watched Zoe, her wet hair clinging to her shoulders and glistening locks. Pure joy as she ran circles around the sprinkler, her shrieks and squeals and laughs echoing through the central district streets. I took this in for a long time. In Mongolia, when a dog dies, he is buried high in the hills so people cannot walk on his grave. The dog's master whispers into the dog's ear his wishes that the dog will return as a man in his next life. Then his tail is cut off and put beneath his head, and a piece of meat or fat is placed in his mouth to sustain his soul on its journey. Before he is reincarnated, the dog's soul is freed to travel the land, to run across the high desert plains for as long as it would like. I learned that from a program on the National Geographic Channel, so I believe it is true. Not all dogs return as men, they say, only those who are ready. I am ready.
You just heard part one of the University of Colorado Denver College of Arts and Media's production of Garth Stein's The Art of Racing in the Rain. This production was adapted and directed by Terry Dodd and recorded by Lauren Brigitzer. Stu Basham is a sound designer. Enzo is played by Alex Evert. Denny is played by J. Nick Dickert. Eve is played by Hannah Reeves. Zoe is played by Demi De Herrera. And the ensemble is played by Craig Ewing, Linda McQuaid, Emily Lay, and Jesse Carruth. One Book, One Denver is coordinated by the Denver Office of Cultural Affairs. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at this same time as we continue with part two of The Art of Racing in the Rain.